The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 274 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the new Lexus NX 450H Plus F-Sport, the Kia Niro EV, the Ford Escape plug-in hybrid, a camp kitchen, so to speak, for the F-150 Lightning. The VinFast VF8 has landed in the U.S., the sinking of Carvana, the new Honda Pilot, and everybody can now get FSD Beta. But should you? All that and more coming up next. This is episode 274 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from the Fast Women podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Let's Say Engadget this week.
And let's start with you, Robbie. What have you been driving?
Oh, man. Get to work.
Each are called on you first.
This week, I drove the brand spanking new Kia Niro EV. This is the, 2023 Kia Niro EV.
Are you sure that's not the KN Niro EV?
The KN Niro. That's why you're having trouble. You just don't know what you're driving.
The 9-inch nails Niro EV. Mr. Self-Destruction.
Like
Well, the KN, in case you haven't seen it, there's been some reports that came out. I guess something they got some data from Google. They've had like 30,000 searches for what is a KN. People are seeing the new Kia logo, and
think it's a whole new car company.
Well, you look at it. If you don't know, it's the Kia logo. It does kind of look like a K and an N.
It does.
And so people are trying to figure out what it is. So, yeah, uh-huh. a lot of people getting confused by that logo.
Uh-huh. All right. That's kind of funny.
Back to you. Sorry to interrupt.
Wait, what was I saying? Oh, anyway, the Kia Niro EV. So back in the day when the Kia Niro EV and the Hyundai Kona Electric were, they essentially came out at the same time, there was a lot of parity between the two. Like, essentially, the Kona was a little bit funner, the drive. The Niro had a little bit more legroom in the back. That was pretty much and they had a little bit of differences in design. Now, so I own a 2022 Hyundai Kona Electric, and I drove the 2023 Kia Niro EV, and the Kia Niro is just so much nicer than my Kona. Because between the time that my Kona came out and the time that this new Niro EV came out, we've had the Ioniq 5, the Ioniq 6, the EV6. And so a lot of that interior that you're seeing in those vehicles is now sort of carried over into the Niro. So you have this very more stylish, I'll say more stylish interior than what I have in my vehicle. It also has that media / climate control strip
along the dash.
Then you have to hit the little button to switch it to media to switch it back to climate control. And at first I'm like, oh, this is kind of clever. But after about a week, it's kind of annoying.
Yes.
Yep.
So after about a week, I'm just like, and I'm noticing it more than I did, like, say, in the EV6 or the Ioniq 5, just because when I had those vehicles, it was just nice outside. I didn't have to worry about climate control, really. Like, here, it's the Bay Area, it's fall, so, like, in the morning, it's 30 degrees, in the afternoon, it's, like, 65, so you're just always like, oh, it's too hot, oh, God, it's too cold, and, And so it gets a little bit irritating. Now you can do what I just learned to do is just adjust the volume with the steering wheel, which I know a lot of people probably just do now anyway, but I'm still like muscle memory from decades and decades and decades of driving, like always reaching for a volume knob. And so that's where the issue comes. I'm always like hitting the volume knob. If I just left it on climate control, it's fine.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it has the hotkeys to a lot of the things in the infotainment system, but most of the stuff you can just hit with the infotainment on the screen. So that said, it feels nicer than the last Niro. It feels nicer than the current Kona EV. Not quite as nice as the EV6 or the IONIQ 5, but it's a nice, let's say, happy medium between those, between the Kona and the new EGMP platform vehicles. I really like it. I'm kind of bummed that we don't have this car instead of our car. So it's a good little car. It has gotten bigger. Yeah, it's gotten a little bit bigger. It's got a little bit more space than the previous model. And what's interesting is that Kia and Hyundai, this platform, it's gas, hybrid, EV, and so you're like, okay, well, so you're gonna suffer is what you're doing. It's a jack of all trades, master of none. Kia has this thing, 253 miles, which is pretty much what people the minimum right now really for people who are sort of concerned about range is 250 miles. 253 miles. I did my test in it yesterday. 263 miles is what my test showed. So 10 miles more. I think it was getting like it popped up to 3.9 right at the very end, but I'm just going to say 3.8. 3.8 miles per kilowatt hour, which is really nice. So it's an efficient vehicle. It's just a tiny little crossover that you can cruise around. It's got plenty of room in the back. I sat in the back seat, even with my seat back, I was able to get back there. I would probably more likely sit in on the passenger side if I was sitting behind somebody who was tall, who was driving. But, just like the other Niro before, it has more leg room than the Kona. It's got 201 horsepower. It's not a quick machine, but it's fun. It's alive. It's a lively little EV, front wheel drive. It starts at $40,000, and the vehicle I had was the EV, the Wave, because.
Well, they love the names. Like they come up with these air, little cute little twin names. Yeah.
Wave.
No, like lava. EX, LX, it's like Wave.
Yeah, Lava. Yeah, it's like an Earth, Wind, and Fire concert. So the standard price for the Wave is $44,450. This one, once they threw all the fancy bits on there, was $47,790. The most expensive thing that they added to it was the Wave Preserve package.
What does that do?
It adds the heat pump, which is nice if you live anywhere.
Maybe that's why you got the extra 10 miles of range.
10 miles,
that
yeah.
That could be it right there.
And then heated rear outboard seats. So mm-hmm. Your rear seats on the, by the windows are heated. So your back and your booty stay nice and warm while you're driving around. Or at least, your passengers. Or if you stick food back there. I mean, most of the time I'm using
keep the pizza seats warm. When you're bringing pizza home, you can keep the pizza toasty.
Yeah, keep my pizza warm.
Yep.
It's a good car. 44,000. It does, once you're talking $47,000, dollars, or really $48,000, you're really up there in the EV6. You're really up there in IONIQ 5 territory. Not the nicest ones, but sort of the low to middle ones. So it's sort of like, well, do you really want to get the Wave? And that's right now it's Kia essentially competing with itself.
Yeah. Well, I think we talked last week about Kia for model year 23. They discontinued the base standard range version of the EV6. So the cheapest EV6 now is like $47,000, $48,000. I think it's $48,000 and change with delivery. And I think you know, because they launched this new version of the Niro EV, I think that's why they dropped the standard range EV6, because that this one kind of hits that
bumps, you know, up again
the lower $40,000 price range.
Yeah,
you know, fills that gap, and then, you know, you're right. I think, you know, probably if you're going to spend 47, 48, you know, now it's like, eh, might as well step up to the EV6 and get the EV6 a little nicer.
Yeah.
Plus, it's going to charge a lot quicker. So this thing charges, it's still on a 400-volt architecture, so it charges at the maximum 85 kilowatts, which is clearly not nearly as fast as the EV6. It has, hold on, I wrote it down. Nope, that's not where I wrote it down. It's my first day here, please.
Welcome.
Welcome to the first
day. This is why I called on you first. You're the new kid in class.
I'm the new kid. How do the things work? Where is the battery size? It's something.
It's about 65 kilowatt hours.
64.8 kilowatt hour batteries. Yeah. Now, I should have just said, hey, Sam, what's the battery size? It's about 65 kilowatt hour battery pack. It's a pretty small battery pack for over 250 miles. So, you know, that's just that efficiency, just getting as, you know, eking as much range as they can out of those battery packs. Kia and Hyundai are a little weird about, like, oh, well, what's gross and what's usable? And every time I ask them, they're like, oh, you want that? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, So, well, it's probably a little bit lower than the 64, which, you know, maybe 63, maybe 62, maybe they're giving us the whole pack. Who knows? Doubtful. I really like this vehicle. If you're going like all in expensive, you're gonna hit up against the EV6 and the Ioniq 5, but you know you're getting a heat pump from you know what I like to see is a $30,000 Kia or Hyundai for with 200 miles.
That'd be nice. I think we'll probably see that in 2024 when they open up their new plant in Georgia. They've started construction on a new plant, a new EV plant in Georgia, and a battery plant there, and so they're going to shift a bunch of EV production there. So we might see, you know, cheaper EVs coming out of there.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I think it's, you know, Kia and Hyundai. I mean, the Hyundai Motor Group essentially. The Genesis is also really nice. They're just kind of killing it in the EV space. They're just kind of killing it. Period. You know, you got to give them, you know, kudos for that. So I get to ask, what do y'all think was the delivery fee?
$994.
Oh, Sam wins. This is $1,295.
Dang it all. I quit.
It's got to come all the way from.
If you're going to go less, you got to go with $1. You can't go $1 less. You have to go all the way down. Because if I'm over at $9.95,
oh, that's true.
Yeah.
It comes all the way from Korea. So
for $9.95.
For $12.95.
$12.95.
Yeah.
All the way over from Korea.
The other downside is because it does come from Korea, there's no longer any tax credits available on any of the Hyundai Motor Group EVs at the moment. So, none of the Hyundais, Kias, or Genesis EVs right now are eligible for credits because they're all built in South Korea. Next year, they're going to start building the GV70 electric in Alabama, and then in late 24, start building some other EVs in Georgia. So those vehicles will be eligible, but none of the current stuff is. So that $40,000 to $47,000 price that you talked about. That's what you're going to pay. Price. There's no discounts.
That's what you're paying.
Yep.
So people are still, I mean, it's crazy because people still bought Teslas, even though they lost their.
Right. Even though the incentive was gone.
How much is it? This much? They're like, okay. I'm like, all right. People still, you know.
I think if you're going to get an EV, I don't know that the lack of the incentive will make you suddenly change your mind and not get one. You just might not get as nice a one, you know?
Yeah.
You might go with a lower trim.
You get the air. One.
Yes, you get the air instead of the wave.
The wind, the wind, the lower one.
You can't get the wind or the fire, just the air.
You get the steam or the lava, you know, yeah. The dirt. I'm getting the dirt.
I'm getting the dirt. I'm getting the dirt. This cheapest one, they got dirt. I want the dirt.
Dirt.
All right. What about you, Nicole?
I am driving the 21 Ford Escape Plug-in
Escape.
The Ford Escape. And yeah, so, and it's a 21, just want to say. So it's, I don't have a Monroney in this, and 21 stuff is a little, I couldn't price it together because it's not there to price anymore because it's 21. But it says, according to an older review that I wrote, where I actually had to look up my own old review, $39,830 is what this goes for. So in plug-in hybrid land for a small, what'd you call it, crossover, I guess? It's a crossover. Yeah. It's tiny.
Tiny.
It's pretty SUV. Small. There's not a ton of room.
It's a CRV, RAV4.
Yeah, like CRV. I feel like the CRV is roomier.
Well, yeah. Maybe.
I don't know, maybe?
Well, the thing about the Escape is it has that sliding rear seat. Mm-hmm. So you can move the rear seat like 8 inches forward or back. If you want maximum cargo space, you can put that rear seat forward. Yeah. You lose a bunch of leg room. But if you want kids
and baby seats,
you don't need that so much.
You don't need that. Right. Yeah. So I was driving it and mostly had people because it's Thanksgiving week just finished. So I had very tall people in my car, 6 foot. I had my 6 foot plus husband in the front seat and my daughter's 6 foot plus boyfriend in the rear seat. So I'm like, can you guys sit behind each other? They could, but there wasn't a lot of room left. They could do it, but there wasn't a lot of space. What was great is just a family car to run around. The kind of cool thing was, I plugged it in every time we were home. We're actually swapping off between plugging in husband's plug-in or my press car plug-in. I only used 3/4 of a tank of gas, and I drove all over the place because I was just able to plug it in all the time. So nice. I ended up getting a little over 50. I think it was 50.2, 50.3 back and forth was my average fuel economy with plugging that in, because I did have to take a couple of long trips into Boston, and this it's still good, 37 miles of all electric range. It was neat. I did see for the first time, I went out the one morning it was cold. Like, it's in the 50s here right now. It doesn't even feel like November in New England, but we did have a morning where it was really, really cold, and it had charged overnight. So it should have been fully charged, and they only had 26 miles of range.
Oh no.
Uh-huh.
Damn you, cold.
Yes.
Yeah, so, the dog's angry.
The dog is ticked off for me. I appreciate the support, pupper. But for the most part, we drove everywhere we drove. It was almost entirely in electric, which is just the cool part about having a plug-in hybrid. You, unless you're going on a long trip, like a longer drive, you can do a lot of your daily errands and running around and never use any gas, which is kind of cool. It has a total range, 520 miles. So you can go for a long way before you need to fuel up or either with gas or plug it back in. Power is fine. It's not impressive. It does its job. It goes. Robbie just shrugged like, that's kind of it. Mm.
That's kind of everything about the Ford Escape is sort of a pee head. It's just like, it's fine.
It's like, it's fine. It has a 2.5 liter four cylinder with 200 horsepower. That's fine.
Fine.
It's adequate.
It does the job. It's adequate.
Fine.
Driving in really heavy traffic coming back from Logan Airport today in Boston was not fun because you're trying to get in and out and moving around people who are perpetually confused and lost and trying to accelerate. And it's a lot of maneuvering. There's just not a lot of power in it. You mash that gas pedal because you want to accelerate. You're like, whoops. Okay. Nope. it doesn't have a lot of get up and go. So it's not a particularly engaging car to drive, but it's fine. It's not like it's a miserable car to drive. It's just, if you're a real driving enthusiast, you're probably not going to have a lot of fun with this just because it doesn't have the power, but does have fantastic fuel economy. Interior is sort of typical of what you get in Fords. I had the titanium, I want to say, which was the top trim. It's a nice interior. It's comfortable, but they don't generally feel super luxurious. There's always a little bit of a plasticky feel to the interiors, especially when you look at the dashboard and stuff. They had this weird trim. And again, don't have a Monroney, but there was this plastic. It was plastic, but it was sort of like this ivory toned kind of thing that wanted to look like wood, but clearly wasn't. It was plastic that went across like the lower part of the dashboard and a little bit on the door, on the side door trim. And it was like this white cream color. It was awful. I don't know what they were going for, but I literally looked at it. I was like, what? And I was tapping it with my finger. I'm like, what is this? Is this? No, this is plastic. What? I don't know if they were trying for wood or if they were just trying for some wood, like.
Just a nice little accent to the car. No,
it wasn't.
And it looked not so much.
Didn't pull it off, Robbie. Just didn't pull it off. So not a super duper fan of the interior. It was comfortable. Like I said, it's not super huge, so it's not a ton of room, but this is a nice compact crossover. It was great in the city. You know, in cities, if you're trying to park, it's fantastic to park because it's not gigantic, so you can actually wedge it into a parking space. So overall, I liked it, but I just, you know, great fuel economy, decent, though not particularly visually appealing interior, but it's comfy and it, you know, it is not visually appealing.
You know what? You're looking at the road. What do you care?
No, so he has this glaring white, whatever it was supposed to be, trim Ford. I don't even know what that was. What is that supposed to be?
It's a pseudo woodish trim.
Did you find it?
The one that I had when I reviewed one trim like a year and a half ago, mm-hmm, had the same thing in there. It's weird, right? It's like a blonde. It's supposed to be like a blonde wood, I think.
But it's very clearly blonde plastic. I don't know. Sam has sent us a link. Is this wrong link here? Oh no! Wait, hang on a second.
Is this the link just back to our thing?
Yes. There we go.
He just linked us to ourselves. Wait, is this the picture?
Let's see the photo.
Because they're trying to match. They're trying to accent it with the seats.
Have like a tan. They're black, I guess, with sort of a tan accent stitching and a tan inset part, like the part, like the bolsters are black and where your butt goes, it's the tan color. It matches that. It's not pretty. It just doesn't work. It doesn't help.
A little bit darker. They want it like, it's lighten it up a little bit, but it kind of, it doesn't work. Oh, well. Mm-mm. You know what? When I was 100 years ago, I used to be a graphic designer. And when I first started, I was really bad with color. Not horrible, but I would do something.
Were you this bad with color, Robbie?
I would have done something like this.
This is why he's not a graphic designer anymore.
Yeah, I'm not a graphic designer anymore because of this.
Are you telling me this is your interior, Robbie? No,
but I probably would have done this.
You would have done this. Yeah, see, it
green
just doesn't,
or something stupid.
It doesn't work. Like, there's a million other things they could have done. Even if they just made it, like, just not the trying to be wood, but not, it just wasn't, yeah, it wasn't, really wasn't great. And the more I look at that, I'm looking at this interior shot that you sent me. I'm like, yeah, nope, I don't think it's any prettier
just
than
don't
I
try. I guess that sounds horrible, but like maybe don't try, but don't try to make it look like fake wood. Just do what they have in the Maverick.
Just do like nice materials, but don't pretend to be something it's not. Like, just do. You can't give me wood at this price point. Then don't give me pretend wood. Just make it a nice, attractive plastic trim, or use some kind of texture to it or something, but like, look at this almost wood. No, I'd rather not.
So the team who did the inside of the Escape and the team who did the inside of the Maverick don't even talk to each other, apparently.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Because the Maverick
not.
Is like, it's an inexpensive car. The materials inside are clearly inexpensive.
Right, but it looks fantastic. I love the interior of the Maverick. It looks great. It works for the truck.
There's no pretense to it. It's not trying to look like something that's not.
Maybe that's what this is. I don't like it when a vehicle tries. This is trying to be fancy, and what it actually makes it look worse.
Yeah.
Don't try it. Like, tried and couldn't. Just don't try. Don't do that to begin with.
I just dropped a link to another photo of the refreshed 2023 Escape, which has a new interior, and they still, it's not.
Oh,
quite as
it's
contrasting.
Like the same thing, but now it's gray.
Yeah, it's now more gray.
They moved it further down the thing, so you can't see it as well.
Yeah.
I think the gray isn't as glaring to me, though, as that cream one, because the cream one is wedged between
there's not
two
as much
really
contrast
like black,
to it.
Yeah.
Like a it's black above the BO, so this is definitely better. But they're like, no, we are going to make this piece look like something clearly is not.
Mm-hmm. You did such a home run with the interior of the Maverick. Just do that.
I know. Yeah. Get the Maverick guys
to
work
be the car.
On the Escape, and then the Escape will look better.
Escape.
I remember like a decade or something ago when Apple introduced the iPhone 5C, which was a cheaper version of the iPhone 5 with a plastic body instead of an aluminum body. And I remember the promotional videos for that. Johnny Ive, their former head designer, described it as unashamedly plastic. Yeah,
and that's what
the Maverick is. It's unashamedly plastic.
Yes.
And this is trying to look like something that's not.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with a car. Like, not every car is a $150,000 whatever Mercedes. Not every car is a luxury car. That's totally fine. If you're not a luxury car, don't try and pretend you're one.
Unless Hyundai for some reason keeps
Hyundai pulls it off. Hyundai and Kia, you guys keep doing what you're doing. Ford,
everyone else,
find the Maverick guys and put them on more cars.
Yeah, get the Maverick. It's like the Nissan Kicks. Mm-hmm. And the Kia Soul, all those vehicles you get in, you're like, this is exactly what this car
right?
is.
And the Hyundai Venue is another one.
Oh, and the Venue, yeah.
None of them are expensive cars. They're all like entry level, like cheap vehicles. It's like, but they look great. Like mm-hmm. getting that, I'm like, okay, if I didn't have a lot of money to spend, I would be perfectly happy in that. Perfectly happy.
Yep. All right. Anything else on the Escape?
No, that's it on the Escape.
Okay. Oh, I've been watching Arrested Development recently, and there's just a funny joke about the Escape where George Blue Sr. is going to go buy a car, and he's like, "Oh, can I get a Bronco?" They're like, "Oh, no, we don't have the Bronco anymore. We kind of want to get away from that whole like criminal element and from the Bronco." Here's the Escape.
That's cute.
Yeah.
I liked that show. It was fun.
At least the first three seasons of it.
They redid the other seasons. They re-edited them, and they're much better without that weird like sort of like jumping around weird timetable thing. But the first three are solid gold, and the other one's like bronze.
All right.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I had the 2023 Lexus NX 450 H+ F Sport handling.
Was it the all-wheel drive?
Yes, it was all-wheel drive.
Oh, there you go, all-wheel drive.
Forgot to mention that.
You almost forgot part of the name. My God, Sam. Yeah,
I know. Can't leave out any of those details.
Did not leave out any descriptions.
It definitely needs more name. I think it's interesting, you know, looking at the last two vehicles that Lexus has introduced, the last two redesigned models, the NX and then the RX this year. Actually, the last three, because the IS as well, same thing. All three of these look, while they're totally different and have no shared sheet metal with their predecessors, all look remarkably like their predecessors, including this one. And at least, you know, in the case of the 450 H+, which is also a plug-in hybrid, so it's all plug-ins this week. This is basically the Toyota RAV4 Prime with a Lexus top hat on it. Which is nothing wrong with that. That, you know, the RAV4 Prime is an excellent platform. You know, it's got the Toyota hybrid system up front, driving the front wheels. So you got a 2.5 liter four cylinder engine with the hybrid eCVT transmission in the front, and then an electric motor at the rear that gives you, I think it's about 304 horsepower in total between the two, and 18 kilowatt hour lithium ion battery that, in the case of the RAV4, gives you, I think, 41 or 42 miles of electric range. The NX is a little bit heavier because it's got more stuff on there, more features.
More fanciness happening.
Yeah, because it's a Lexus. So it gets a little bit less. It's rated at 37 miles of electric range. On my driving loop, I actually got about 32 and a half miles before the engine came on, and it said that the battery was depleted, which was a little disappointing. Not bad. You know, it's better than what I managed the last time I drove the Lincoln Corsair Grand Touring, which is their plug-in hybrid. That one did less than 30 miles on a charge. So I got about between 32 and 33 miles with the NX. And the powertrain is excellent in this thing. Lexus has done a really good job. Toyota Lexus has done a really good job with this powertrain. It's got plenty of performance. It's, 32 miles of electric driving range on a vehicle like this is more than adequate. It'll be enough that most people will be able to do pretty much all of their daily driving with electricity alone, assuming you plug it in every night. And actually, earlier this afternoon, when I was doing Leo Laporte's radio show, there was somebody in the chat that asked about, whether they should get a RAV4 Prime, if they live in a condo and don't have anywhere to charge. And I said, no, if you don't have somewhere to charge, or if you're not going to plug in your car, do not buy a plug-in hybrid. Just get the regular hybrid.
Drag a battery around.
Yeah, you're dragging 400 pounds of dead battery around everywhere. So unless you're going to charge it every night or every opportunity, don't bother getting the plug-in hybrid. And Lexus has a very good standard hybrid version of the NX as well. If you do plug it in, you will be able to use very little gas in your daily commuting with this thing. The one I had was in the ultrasonic blue mica paint. It's ultrasonic blue mica 2.0. Apparently there was an earlier version.
There's a 1.0 that now has been superseded by the 2.0.
Apparently, yes. which is an extra $600, and I think definitely worth it. It's a great looking color. And this one also had the circuit red Nulux and dark graphite aluminum trim. I'm not sure exactly what Nulux is. I'm assuming it's some sort of
suede. Is it suede?
No, it's a faux leather, I believe. It's not a suede material. It's a leather like material. But definitely gives this thing a sporty feel to it, with combination of black and red trim on the seats and mostly dark interior, and some dark aluminum trim. This one has the new NX has the new Toyota Lexus infotainment system. And unlike when I drove the RX back in September, when in every single example of the RX that I drove, it resolutely refused to recognize my voice every time I said, "Hey, Lexus," this one worked flawlessly every time. So
there you go.
Yeah. So this one didn't, the NX has nothing against me, unlike the RX.
The NX likes you, your friends.
Well, yes. The RX is,
this has got 14-inch touchscreen, display. And, as I've mentioned a few times before with other vehicles that I've driven that have this, I'm still a bit annoyed that, you've got such a large screen. And Toyota and Lexus refuse to let you have to split the screen and have two things on the screen at once. If you're using navigation, that's all you get on the screen is navigation. You have no media controls up there. And if you're using media controls, you can't see any of the nav stuff, which I think is kind of annoying. I think allow it to split. Now, fortunately, if you opt to use Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, you can have multiple things on the screen at once. so you can have a map and have your media controls up there at the same time, which I think is handy. This one had the heads-up display, which is in the standard in the F-Sport all-wheel drive handling package. And one of the nice things in the heads-up display, it's not an augmented reality heads-up display, but it's using the camera. It's got a wide-angle camera, and when it detects... when you're at an intersection, for example, and it detects a car approaching from either direction, it'll flash arrows on there, to indicate where there's a vehicle coming from the side. So if you're looking straight ahead, you'll get that alert that there's a car approaching from the side, which is a handy little bit of extra information to have. That's a good thing. It's got Toyota Lexus's lane tracing assist, which is their version of sort of lane centering. It's okay. It's not the greatest system. But overall, it's got a pretty full suite of driver assist features that all generally work fine. The one I had the wireless charging pad at the bottom of the center stack. Also had Lexus digital key, smart access, card key, as well as the premium triple beam LED headlamps, which worked quite well. Did a good job of illuminating the road at night, so no complaints there. This vehicle is a similar size to the Escape, which means that it can accommodate a couple of adults in the back seat. You're probably not going to want to take a cross country road trip with adults back there. Kids will have more than plenty of room back there. The nice thing about these newer vehicles is they've learned the batteries have gotten smaller. They've learned how to package them under the floor so it doesn't intrude on the cargo space. So you still have plenty of cargo space in the back. With the F Sport, it's got a little bit, it's got bigger wheels and tires, a little bit tighter handling than the standard versions of the NX. It's fun to drive with that 300 plus horsepower. If you plug it in at night, so you've got the full electric power from the rear axle, you can have some decent fun with this thing. So, there was no Monroney with this one, but the
you're living my life, Sam.
I know for whatever reason, no Monroney on this one. So I built it up on the Lexus website, came to $62,720 in total, and I have no idea what the delivery charge is because they doesn't break it out here on the
$1,300
on the thing. Yeah, it's probably somewhere around
$1,300. Just guess that.
So that's the 2023 Lexus NX 450H Plus F Sport handling.
F Sport.
The base NX, which is now the NX 250, starts at just under $40,000 for front wheel drive, which that's with a 200 horsepower naturally aspirated four cylinder, and then there's also a turbo version and a regular hybrid. With 240 horsepower. So, all right. That's it for the garage. So when the Rivian R1T was introduced, one of the cool features that they had that they were offering in there was the so-called camp kitchen, which slides out of the gear tunnel behind
which
the cab.
Is so cool.
Yeah.
I don't have a Rivian, but if I did, I'd want that.
It was a $5,000 option. And
I'd still want it. If I was buying a Rivian, why not?
And they're not currently offering it. Because they decided they had to go back and redesign it. Apparently there were some issues with the original design. I think it had more to do with the sliding track system that allows it to slide in and out of the gear tunnel. The other day I noticed on Twitter, somebody basically came up with their own camp kitchen based on the F-150 Lightning. Because one of the advantages of the Lightning is you got all this power available from all these plugs, 9.5 kilowatts of power. So David Ferris posted a picture showing in the front trunk, baking muffins and steaming beans in the front consumes about 4 miles of range. Your results may vary. The nice thing is, you got 10 plugs in the F-150 Lightning, 10 outlets. So you can buy a couple of induction hot plates off of Amazon for like $60 a pop and add a microwave and a slow cooker and some other stuff. And you basically have the same thing as what you'd have with the camp kitchen.
This is just brilliant. It's the holidays. Like when you don't have enough room in your oven for all the things, it's like, hold on a second. Let me just open the front of my truck. We're just going to keep those green beans warm in the front. Hold on a second.
Yeah, perfect.
With the regular F-150, when we did the review, because of the power in the back. We made pizza rolls, Tostitos pizza rolls, and played Mario Kart. That was part of our video review of it. So we're out in a field,
put a TV
with
the
television, the Nintendo Switch, and we're eating pizza rolls and playing Mario Kart.
Perfect.
Nice.
Of nowhere. So these are the things you can do with the cars of the future, people. You can plug it in. You can play Mario Kart and eat pizza rolls in the middle of nowhere.
All right. Nicole, you a couple of months ago, you went to Vietnam, visited VinFast.
I did.
And they claimed at the time that they were going to be shipping cars to the U.S. by the end of the year.
October or November or December, depending on which human you inquired with.
Well, turns out they landed in November. They made it. They're here.
Woohoo!
The first boatload landed in Los Angeles last week.
So they did. So November turns out to be the right number, or the right month. Okay.
999 VF8s landed.
That's a lot, actually. Yeah.
That is really a lot. I expected that 12.
I know, right?
Because every automaker is like, we're going to have it by the end of the year, and then they'll deliver like 20 or 12 or 13 or.
Well, I think last week one of the questions we had was something from somebody about how many GM EVs had been delivered, and. Like through the end of October or the end of September, Cadillac had delivered 36 Lyrics.
Yeah. 36.
So we got by the end of the year, which 36.
Yeah. So we don't know when VinFast is actually going to start delivering these to customers, but
I'm reading this story. I just lost it. It says a few of them are going to go to autonomy, but that the rest of them, it said, should be delivering to customers by the end of December.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Autonomy is an electric car subscription company. Mm-hmm. And they did a deal with VinFast to buy, I think, 2,500 VF8s. So it sounds like most of this first batch are going to be going to them. And through autonomy, you can subscribe. You can get a subscription, it's basically a month-to-month lease on an EV. And they already offer the Tesla Model 3 and the Model Y. And then the VF8 will be their third. And they're adding other stuff to the fleet as well. I think they're planning to offer some Polestars and Mach-Es and Lyrics and VW ID4s as well. But it sounds like the VF8 will be the second one to arrive.
Yeah. Go VinFast.
Yeah.
They said they wanted it by the end of the year, and they made it. So good for them.
Well, we'll have to see if we can get a drive in one of these before too long.
Have to drive all fly all the way to Vietnam.
Yeah. See if they're actually ready for prime time, because when you drove it in.
I had a lot of reservations. I still do. I'm hoping. I had reservations with great hope that they would make them. Like take care of some of the things that just were not up to snuff. We'll see. Cause if these are getting into consumer hands by the end of basically in a month, it's almost the end of November. It's November 27th. Right. So let's see by the end of December, what people say when they get them, if they're as excited about them as they were when they put the money down to buy one.
when you gave them your feedback, were they receptive to the feedback when you told them what was?
You know what? When they asked for feedback, it was interesting because I felt like they were genuinely sad about my feedback about the quality issues. Like it wasn't like they poo-pooed me and said you're wrong and you're horrible. There was some sadness. I think they put a lot of work into this, and I was I was honest with them about it. But they did acknowledge that there's things we can continue to do, and we're still. Especially in terms of the driving, not so much quality inside stuff, but we're still finessing things, and we're working on getting this right for the U.S. market versus the Vietnamese market. So I think they were still making changes that could definitely make what we finally get here better. So I'd really be anxious to drive when they're like, okay, now it's done. Like now you're driving what we're sending to customers in the U.S.
Cool. At least they're, when you tell people, sometimes the automakers, you're like, well, so what do you think? And you're like, well, I think this, and then when they come back at you with we did this because of this, you're just like, so you're not even listening.
Right. Like they have all these reasons, all these things you don't like. We did these things on purpose because the VinFast people genuinely didn't do that. Like everybody had different concerns about things, and everything that was brought to their attention, they sort of like, okay, all right. Yep. Oh, and this we're working on. This isn't quite where it's going to be. this is like, they listened. So I give them a ton of credit for listening to the feedback that I gave, that various people gave, some about the infotainment system and just different things. The people who gave them feedback that I witnessed, they listened. They did listen. They even called over like the person, like if you're talking to this guy, but that's not his thing. They're like, wait, this guy handles what you're saying. Talk to him and tell him what you think about the thing he developed. So that was good.
Let me call Billy Chassis over.
Billy Chassis. Yeah.
Whatever your last name, that's your job.
That's your job.
Okay. I assume neither of you have ever bought or sold a car to Carvana, have you?
Have not.
No, I have not.
So for those listening that are not familiar with Carvana, this is a company that popped up a few years ago trying to improve the used car experience. I have sold multiple cars over the years from my driveway. Whenever we bought new cars, I've never traded in a car. I've always just sold them to a private party sale because, you never get a good deal from a dealer on a trade-in. Carvana tried to improve on this experience by making it easy to sell your car to Carvana. You could go online, get a price estimate for your car, put in all the information, get a price estimate of what they'll pay you. And then if you accept the estimate, they'll come and pick up the car and give you a check. And then similarly on the shopping side, they turn around and clean the cars up and resell them at presumably more than they paid for them, hopefully more than they paid for them.
That's the goal.
You could shop online and they'll deliver the car to your door. And I know I've seen the Carvana trucks around, flatbeds with a car that they've either picked up or are about to drop off for customers, running around, and they have some retail outlets where they have these big, looks like a giant vending machine full of cars.
They do look cool. You got to give them credit. Yeah. It looks really cool. It catches your attention.
Yeah, unfortunately, the business has not worked out so well for them. They've lost a lot of money. They've never been even remotely profitable, and their share price has dropped 97% this year.
97%.
Yeah.
I was reading this story, and it says in here that this one analyst lowered their price target from $7 to $7 from $30 to reflect the likelihood of insolvency by 2024.
Yeah. So if you're hoping to sell your car to Carvana, you might want to do it quickly and cash that check as soon
now,
as you can.
Immediately, the second you have the check.
Don't hang on to check. It.
Yeah.
Let's see. They reported third quarter results a few weeks ago, and they lost $508 million in the third quarter.
Jeez, that's a lot of money.
And especially in a time when used car prices have been at an all-time high. It seems crazy that that anybody is actually losing money on this, but the logistics of what they do, because they actually deliver the cars and go and pick up the cars and then presumably spend some money refurbishing the cars before they resell them. That is very expensive, and they haven't managed to figure out how to take those costs out of the system yet. It sounds like they might be running out of cash before they do. So we'll see. The Honda Pilot, the new Honda Pilot for 2023. What do you think?
There's a new Honda Pilot.
Sound excited.
I'm super excited. I don't know. What do you think? Are you super excited? Does it look dramatically new and improved?
It's different.
To you?
Hard to say how much improved it is. It looks fine.
I feel like that's the biggest insult me all use. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's just fine.
Yeah,
I see the back of the car. Hold on.
Yeah, they've tried to make it look a little more rugged.
The front of the car.
Wait, here
Okay. No, it's fine. I like this like new little like very the front end design language that Honda's going with right now.
I'm literally looking at it and I'm trying to see what's striking and different about.
It's got more grill.
It's got more grill.
It's got a little sense in here.
It's a kind of
flatter face that Honda's been going with on their recent vehicles.
Yeah, it's a little flatter face. Kids will love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it will be reliable and safe and all the other stuff. You know, the photos they released of it, show it going off-road.
I like the trail sport one. Model. That looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, everybody's been doing these sort of more off-roady, rugged-looking versions of their midsize SUVs and crossovers the last couple of years. Honda's got the Trail Sport. Forget the one that Nissan has on the Pathfinder. Rock Ridge.
Rock Creek, but I might be wrong on that. Yeah.
And, not that anybody driving these kinds of vehicles is actually going to really go off-road with these things.
I think looking at this though, as I'm skidding down here, the starting price for the Pilot is now $40,445.
Yeah, it's about $1,100 more than it was before. It wasn't particularly cheap to begin with.
Yeah.
It's now a little bit higher. It's got a little more power than before. The blue is kind of cool looking. It looks like grabber blue from the Mustang.
It does look a little bit. I was thinking that too. It's a cool looking color. I think that's part of why I like it. It looks fun for a crossover, but it does look like the Mustang.
Yeah, it's slightly more rugged looking than before.
Slightly more rugged.
That's fine. Some ruggedy things, though. There's a one-inch suspension lift. That's technical term there, Robbie. One-inch suspension lift. There's exclusive dampers, new stabilizer bars, and enhanced spring rates, according to the article that I'm referencing. I mean, well, geez. You might as well take it on the Rubicon.
Everyone's going a little bit more, it's more rugged, and no one ever does anything rugged.
Everyone just likes the look of it. I think they should just say this trim does nothing different than the other trims, but it looks cooler. Like, they need to come up with a word for that.
It looks cooler.
The new rugged design, the new, they need a rugged way, to say it looks cool, but don't bother doing any of the stuff that would make it 1-inch suspension lift. Woohoo! It's like pretending the interior of that Ford Escape. Don't pretend. Just make it look pretty and say, all we did was make it look prettier. All we did was make it look like it can off-road.
Okay. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
I got an update on Carvana.
Oh, yeah?
I put in the Jaguar, $421. That's what I'll give
that's
you
the pay
for. Is this your Jaguar?
For the X-Type, yeah. I didn't tell them about the check engine lights.
That might have an impact on.
No,
I currently don't know my own license plate number because I'm trying to pull mine up and I literally can't get mine to come up. I was going to see what my car. And I'm like, that's not my car.
Okay. Final item for this week. Tesla is now making the full self-driving beta available to anyone, regardless of what your safety score is on their scoring system. So even if you're no longer considered a safe, even if you're not considered a safe driver, you can still have the FSD beta.
Sammy's like, I can't.
It's still a bait.
The only reason why they're doing this is because sales are slowing down, and once they deliver the FSD beta, they can recognize the revenue. They can recognize that $15,000 or $10,000 to $15,000 that people paid for FSD. Because up to this point, until they give them this software, Tesla can't count that money as revenue. on their income statement, and so now they can that boosts their top line revenue, and so their numbers will look better when they do their Q4 earnings.
So there you go. But all a trick.
You seem unconvinced that this is a wise idea, Sam.
It's definitely not a wise idea. definitely not.
Not wise. Not wise.
Okay. Let's answer some questions.
Okay.
First up, from Andy C. This came in through Discord. Been listening to you guys since the Autoblog podcast days. Obviously not listening to the two of you, but... Despite the turnover in the cast, the quality of the show continues to be excellent. So here's the question. What is the future of gas stations? As EVs start to take up a significant portion of market share vehicles, how will gas stations cope with the change? Can you discuss the economics of it? And how about the Norway-Sweden gas station? So I don't know about the last part.
Man, any thoughts on gas stations?
Like, what's going to, I feel like gas stations are going to be here for a while because they're going to have gas powered vehicles for quite some time yet.
Yeah, gas powered cars will be around. But I think what's going to happen is that in addition to the gas pumps, you're going to see more and more charging stations, like I've seen in Germany, where there's a gas station with charging stations there too, mm-hmm. as well. So you're going to see more charging stations show up. And you know those gas stations that have like a Starbucks or a Carl's Jr., or I guess y'all would call it a Hardee's. Or a McDonald's. I think we're going to see more of those where you're like, oh, well, I need to go to the station. And while I'm there, I can go have a delicious Big Mac while my car is charging. I can go have a Big Mac.
Delicious Big Mac.
I can go have a Big Mac. I think we're going to see more and more of that where the gas station will still have like all the stuff, you know, the beef jerkies, the Red Bulls, the things that a gas station is required to have. Yeah, if they don't have that, I mean, is it really a gas station? The little trees, the two hot dogs for 99 cents, like all that stuff's going to be there, but I think we're going to see a lot more where they have some sort of area where people can chill out and have a delicious, well, they can have a meal of some
just,
sort.
Like, be careful. Don't lie to people. It's just a meal.
Consume some calories.
I think they're going to be a lot like truck station, like truck stops, mm-hmm. be like the Flying J and the Rotten Robbies and whatnot. So they're, I think Flying J has dog parks at most of their,
oh, really?
Their stations. So they have like the big giant area where you can buy all the stuff, the big market, and then they have whatever's attached to it, some sort of fast food or a Starbucks, and they have like a little dog run area. I think we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, they have to be more than just a gas station going forward as they morph over towards doing EV stuff. They have to be more than just a gas station.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, most gas stations over the next several years will probably start installing chargers. I know there's a gas station nearby me here that just put in a couple of chargers this summer, a couple of charge point chargers. They put them around the back behind the building, but, you know, they're still there.
I thought it's fun when they're like hidden somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we'll see more and more of them, you know, putting them, you know, even putting them out front, you know, especially if they have a convenience store. Because, you know, Andy asked about the economics of it. You know, installing DC fast chargers is not inexpensive. I mean, it's a several hundred thousand dollar investment to put in a couple of DC fast chargers. It's typically somewhere, you know, for 150 kilowatt and up charger, you're looking at least $100,000, to do that. But, the reality is, you know, most gas stations actually make little or no profit on selling the gas. Mm-hmm. Most of their profit margin comes from the store, from the stuff people come in, you know, to, you know, buy some hot dogs or some Slurpees or, you know, some Snickers bars or a bottle of windshield washer fluid. You know, that stuff has very high profit margins. And, you know, if you can get somebody to hang around for 20 or 30 minutes and, you know, consume a few, you know, hot dogs that have been on the roller for 32, you know, 36 hours or more.
That makes me cringe. Those things are creepy.
I'm going to say that never, I survived them. I was, like, my entire 20s, I lived off those AM/PM 2 for 99 cent hot dogs.
Oh God, I've never bought one of those hot dogs on the rolling things.
Well, I put whatever you do, jalapenos. Avoid the sushi though.
Oh yeah, don't get gas station sushi. But yeah, those hot dogs. Oh, I ate a lot of those hot dogs.
Oh no, I can't. Ooh, cringe.
I'm a better person for it.
Are you? Think what you would be if you hadn't eaten those
alive.
Hot dogs.
I'm alive.
He is alive.
He looks reasonably healthy. Strong.
Look at that. It's like a cast iron. I'm gonna live forever.
Oh, so yeah, no, I think we will see most gas stations installing EV chargers over the next several years, and you know, over time, you know, we might even see them. You know, I mean, there's still going to be a need to sell gas for decades to come, because we got 290 million registered vehicles on the road in the U.S. Roughly 288 million of those run on gasoline or diesel. And they're not going away anytime soon. They're going to be with us for quite a while. Having the gas stations, you know, they'll have a need for those pumps for quite some time. And then, you know, in some places you'll probably see them eventually starting to remove some pumps and put chargers in place in the place of those pumps. And eventually at some point in the distant future, you know, might just get rid of the gas altogether and just have the electricity. All right.
But always beef jerky.
Yes.
Always beef jerky.
Speaking of which, my wife and her friend did a road trip to Austin last week or the week before. And my wife encountered a Buc-ee's for the first time.
Did she see the giant beef jerky buffet of 90 different kinds of beef jerky?
She was just appalled.
Of course she was.
She was appalled at what she saw at Buc-ee's.
I love Buc-ee's.
They used the restroom and then were on their way again. Okay. Anyway, Daryl Cole asked, what the hell are you all doing to these test vehicles? TLDR, two of the five cars had their clutches fried before the comparison. And he has a link to a Motor Trend comparison test of $35,000 sporty cars, the Subaru WRX, Honda Civic, Hyundai Elantra N, VW Golf GTI, and Toyota GR86. I only saw, reading through this, I only caught one that fried its clutch.
Yeah, I was just doing the same thing. I was trying to find, unless they somewhere in here said some of these had a wonky clutch, but they drove it anyway. But I could only find the GTI.
Yeah, the GTI was the only one that didn't finish the test.
Yeah,
because the clutch died. I don't know about the two of you, but you know, I generally try not to abuse cars too much. I think we all generally try to drive them the way typical owners would drive them. The magazines, Motor Trend, Car and Driver, Road and Track, you know, they go out and actually do track testing, and they do abuse these cars. I can always tell when a car like this has come to me after it's been like with the Car and Driver guys, because they're here in the same city where I am. And you know, if the what was I driving recently? Oh, when I had the GTI recently, you know, the tires were all shredded on that thing. The shoulders were all shredded on that thing. And you know, they do drive them pretty hard when they're doing their track testing. But you know, I've never, you know, other than, you know, a couple of flat tires, I've never, you know, had an issue like this with any of the cars that I've driven.
Yeah. I've never had one that was fried when I got it. I've had some that have been a little bit rough, and the same thing, you can tell when somebody's track driven it to push it as hard as you can. I mean, there's some value in doing that, especially on these cars in this comparison, because they are definitely trackable cars. Most people realistically aren't going to do that. So I think if you're giving a review and just like, we took it to the track, this is how it tracked, it's like, okay, so for the 10 guys out of the 1,000 that you sell that are actually going to take it to a track and push it that hard. But the only way to know is to drive it really hard. And if the clutch doesn't make it, well, that's feedback on the car. You know what I mean? Like It's legitimate, but I'm pretty nice. I don't think I've never fried a car's clutch or completely destroyed the tires or gave it back in any horrible abused condition, but I have on occasion seen them abused and at different events. And, you know, it's, I think it depends what your objective is the person, the journalist and the outlet you're reviewing for, you know?
Yeah. I'm not going to say who, but I have gotten in car after some people at big drive programs who the person clearly knows how to drive well, maybe they know how, but maybe they haven't done so in a while. And so
I know the basic mechanics of how to operate a clutch.
They know how it's supposed to work.
And then there's a lot of people who just do not feel comfortable just saying, you know what, I'm not good at this. There's this sort of like, I'm going to lose face. I don't care. If you're an automotive journalist and you're just like, I'm just not good at driving a clutch, or I don't like driving clutches, or I don't like, that's fine. Because you know why? Like 90% of the cars on the road don't have a clutch.
That's the reality. Although most journalists, most of us know how to drive a clutch, a manual, and we're totally comfortable with it. There are automotive journalists who do not know how to drive one and who are not comfortable with it, even if they do. And you don't drive them that often unless you have one that you own, that's your personal car. You could go months without getting a press car that has a manual transmission, and you get into it for a second and it is like, okay, how's this working again? You know, and everyone is different. Like the pressure points on those clutches vary greatly from one car to the next. So there's a little bit of a learning curve with every single one to drive it. Like it's not the first time you've been in a car with a clutch in it. But if you don't know how to drive one and you're a journalist, I don't care. Don't drive it. Like, I don't care. Don't pretend you do. Just say like, you know what? I don't like driving one, or I don't know how to drive one. And
you know, I mean, they always ask us at drive programs, if they have cars with manuals, you know, it's like, they ask, you know, if you don't know how to drive a manual or you don't want to drive a manual, let us know. We'll make sure you get into an automatic.
Right. Yeah. And the few times there've been a few occasions where there've been cars where like there was something, the Toyota thing, something was a track thing. And it was like, we will only have vehicles with manual transmission. So like in bold, all caps with an asterisk and a, 20 point in the email, this is what we were have for this event. So if you're not comfortable with that, you should not come to this event. I think that's maybe the second or third time I've ever seen that, but they were very upfront. Like either you can do this or you can't, but please have no problem saying, I'm sorry, I can't attend if that's not up your alley. Yep.
Yeah. No one cares. I do care though. When I go down to the garage during a group drive, and the garage is just filled with smoke, and the car I'm gotten into just reeks of a melted clutch. And I'm like, this is not going to be fun at all.
Exactly.
this is my day. I get to be the person who like babies the car because I don't want the clutch to melt out of
it. You know what? That's the only thing. It was in an IMPA test days years ago where I got in a car, started driving. All of a sudden I'm like, oh, wait, I don't have all the gears. Oh, Lord, what's happening? And it's like, we're just going to go in second gear and just hope we get back to the end of this. I like came puttering and I'm like, this is all I got, guys. Get out of the way. Get out of the way. Got to put in the parking space. Yeah. But it was, fried before I get into it. But so somebody fried it. It didn't know how to drive this one. So, yeah.
Yeah. If you just don't, feel comfortable, just say, hey, I don't feel like it today. Whatever makes you feel better about not driving a clutch. And again, like I've had friends who are like, oh, my, partner or my friend doesn't know how to drive a clutch. I can't believe it.
Oh,
I'm like,
what?
Yeah, because there's like five cars you can drive a clutch now. I really enjoy driving a vehicle with a clutch, but if you don't, that's fine.
Don't
and you
drive
know what?
One.
You don't have to learn. It's not, there's never.
If you don't want to, unless we have one caveat to that, if you are going to go on the Amazing Race, you need to learn to drive one because those people always end up in Europe with a car with a manual transmission. Like, I don't know how to drive this. You lose the whole race. Have you not seen the show? You must learn to drive
Amazing
one.
Race.
If you're going to be on the Amazing Race, you must learn to drive one. I'm going to mock you mercilessly when the episode where you can't drive it airs.
If you're going to another country and you have to rent a car, it's probably going to have a manual transmission. Yes. So that's another reason.
Europe is a whole different ballgame.
Europe is
it's getting more and shifting more and more towards automatics. Yeah.
When I went over 1 year and I rented a car, they're like, oh, we have you're American. They tried to give me the automatic. I'm like, no. I know what I'm doing.
No, I can do this.
And they looked at me like, you sure? We don't want a broken car.
But for the Amazing Race, people, I'm telling you, if you're on the Amazing Race, learn how to swim and learn how to drive a manual transmission.
But the first time I went to England in 1992, I picked up a rental car at Birmingham Airport, and it was a manual. But more than that, it's like I went out to the garage to get in the car, turn the key to start it, press the clutch pedal down, put it in neutral. Engine cranks, would not fire up. I could not figure out why it wouldn't fire up. And I start looking around, see if I'm missing something. And I looked under the dash. This was in 1992. Okay. And, you know, by that time, there were no cars with carburetors still on the market in the U.S. This was a Renault 19. And I looked down, and this was a new car. And it had a manual choke.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I pulled out the choke. Pulled the choke cable out.
Oh, that's amazing. Cranked it,
fired right up.
Wow, like, that's really old school.
Yeah. So, you know, some of that stuff stuck around for a long time in Europe.
Yeah.
So you do have to be, you know, you do have to watch out for stuff like that. I don't think there's any manual chokes left anywhere, pretty much.
I don't think so.
But you will run across some oddball stuff from time to time. Okay. So of these five cars in this test, GTI, Civic Si, Elantra N, GR86, that's it. Oh, and the WRX. What's your choice? Which one would you pick?
Can I have a tie? Do I have to pick just one?
Yeah, you can tie.
Okay, so my tie is the Elantra and the GTI.
Okay.
Because I like both of them. I love the GTI. Mine did not have a fried clutch when I drove it. So I drove a GTI and the Elantra. I like that the GTI is super, super sporty and fun. And I like the Elantra is this sort of unassuming, like, oh, this is really going to be that fun. This is just a little compact car and you get behind the wheels like, woohoo! It's just super fun.
Yeah. All right. Robbie?
What?
So it goes back and forth between these two. And the WRX and the GR86. The WRX is a vehicle that you have to either have owned or had for like a month or two in order to really understand just the transmission. Talking about like weird transmissions, because it has such a short gearing for second gear, and it, there's some really nice windy roads near my house, like within like 2 or 3 miles, but they're not very well maintained. So I typically will go over to Marin with a nice car and drive it on those very nice windy roads that have Marin money. every other car that I've brought over on these roads are getting tossed about. They're getting, you know, bounced everywhere. The WRX, no problem, because it's what it's built for. And, you know, again, I owned a WRX at one point. So it's essentially the same car every year, just with a different thing on top. It's just like the same. It's everything a little bit more powerful. But it really just comes down to figuring out that that transmission and that turbo lag. And once you got it, the car pays off in spades and it's really built for just aggressive driving. But if you don't, I know a lot of people who just, I can't figure it out. I don't like it. It doesn't feel like it should, you know, and I completely understand, but I love the WRX. And then the GR86, which is just a rear wheel drive fun car. It's the Miata for tall people.
I do agree with you on the WRX. It's very fun to drive, but it takes a little time to figure out that transmission. The first few minutes I was in it, I thought, why is this driving so harshly? And I'm like, wait, I'm not shifting where I should be shifting. Like, it takes a little time to get the hang of that one.
It takes a little time and just figuring out that timing with everything.
Yep.
But once you've got it, you're like, oh, man.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't driven a Subaru in a while, so I can't comment on that, or at least not a WRX. I've only driven the BRZ. But, you know, I would take a manual GR86, because the one that Motor Trend tested was actually an automatic. I would take a manual GR86 and the dual clutch Elantra N for, you know, as a daily driver. But that is also a lot of fun. I do like the Elantra N a lot. And the GTI is great too. And so is the Civic Si. But I would, if I had to choose, it would.
Oh, this is what, this is the second car that was broken. This is the car that was broken, was the GR86, because they couldn't get the manual in.
Oh, okay.
Broken. That's the second car.
Ah.
All right. No, I drove that GR86 up in the,
so you broke it
last year. No, I haven't had it.
Robbie's fault.
But I drove it last year at Angeles Crest Highway, and I had the BRZ, and the fact that they erased that torque curve in the, you know, between, I think, the 5 and 6. Yeah, the torque hole. It just made me so happy. I was just so happy with that car, and I was like, oh, I got to go buy one. I got to sell mine and buy a new one of these, and I got to this is what I got to do. This is what I got to do.
And then, of course,
the upsell, you know, or the price adjustment, $15,000 for a $30,000 car. I'm like, never mind.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. And finally, from Andrew Pappas, there was a question about cost savings for EVs. And this was from a previous episode. He has a link to the Alternative Fuels Data Center website, from the Department of Energy. It has that link, and I'll put it in the show notes, but that link, has a cost calculator in there. There's also a similar, calculator that's built into, if you go to fueleconomy.gov, you can go in, when you pick a car, and pull up the stats on it, for that vehicle. And it shows you the estimated fuel costs over 5 years. If you look in fine print, there's a link that says personalize, and you can go in and you can adjust, the number of miles, for however many miles you drive per year and whatever the fuel costs are in your area, which may differ from the national average, things like that. But this cost calculator is a pretty quick and dirty way to estimate what your fuel costs are going to be for any given vehicle, which is very handy. So I will put that in the show notes. It says an engineer's solution, as you can adjust tons of different factors, including multiple years of gas and EV cars. You can do the same thing through the fueleconomy.gov site. The nice thing in fueleconomy.gov is you can pull up a comparison of multiple vehicles. So you can have gas vehicles and electric vehicles, or gas and electric versions of the same car. So you could pull up, the Kia Niro hybrid, the Kia Niro plug-in hybrid, and the Kia Niro EV, and you can compare all three of those, at the same time and figure out based on what your typical driving needs. If you drive 5,000 miles a year versus 15,000 miles a year, your payback period is going to be quite different. Andy mentions, EV payback seems to be localized depending on cost of gas versus cost of electricity. What's a no-brainer in LA might be a non-starter in Boston. So you definitely want to take all this stuff into account when making a decision about which vehicle to buy.
Yeah, no, this is a good link. I've used this for a couple articles I've written about the difference between gas cars and electric cars and costs and savings and whatnot. And it really does, here in California, even though we have very expensive electricity, we also have very expensive gas. And Arcona is way more sense financially than our BRZ.
Yeah. I bet.
But the BR, yeah, we drive the Kona is the daily driver. The BRZ is like, oh, I'm going to have some fun. And I think that's where we're headed. I tell people, you should buy an electric car as your second car, knowing that in like 2 or 3 months, that electric car is going to be their main car and their gas car is going to be their second car for like trips or for fun or whatever. I think that's more and more, I think, I need a big truck. I'm like, yeah, but do you need a big truck every day? And you need an electric car, a second car anyway. Once you get an electric car, and they're like, yeah, I guess I'll just get it, but I'm going to drive my truck. And then they realize, oh, if I just drive around in my ID4 all day, and then I can take my truck to the lake, and I can take my truck, camping, and I'm going to save a lot more money than if I bought, an F-150, and then I bought a regular Ford Escape or something.
All right. And I think that was it. That's all we've got for this week. So we'll talk to you all next time. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.